Did Barbara talk to you at all to, I think she talked to Lynn.
Board of Directors of Oceano Community Services District. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
President Hill.
Here.
Vice President Bookout.
Here.
Director Dahl.
Here.
Director Dean.
Here.
Director Mann.
Please join us in the flag salute.
Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Brings us to public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on items that are not on the agenda. Would anyone like to address the board at this time? Okay, hearing none. Brings us to item number four, board member items for discussion.
I have nothing at this time.
Pamela, Bill.
No, this time.
Neither do I.
That's what happens when you meet 3 nights in a row.
Brings us to review and approval of the minutes. We have three from.
We have actually none.
Actually none. That's we.
We were too busy doing other things to get minutes done this week. I apologize for that, but I assure you, before the witching hour comes, we will have all sets of minutes properly. Put together.
It's been a rather busy couple weeks, hasn't it?
It sure has. Our tent was there, but it just didn't execute.
Good enough.
Okay, then we move on to item 6A, which is our quarterly dividend and investment report for the period ended June 30, 2007.
It's what you cash balances in our various accounts at the county, at LAIF, and our three accounts at Midstate. At the end of the quarter, we had a cash balance of $1,946,401, and the quarterly interest earned was $20,552.81.
Great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any comment or questions from the board? Comment or questions from the public?
Comments or questions from staff?
Starting with item 8A, cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines. This is our continual disclosure of the emergency that the board declared after the San Simeon earthquake. I think the board is probably fairly familiar with this item. Any comment or questions? Any comment or questions on this item from the public? Hearing none. I'll look for a motion.
I'll make a motion to, for the cleaning and inspection, the continued cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines.
Okay.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded that we continue the disclosure of emergency after the San Simeon earthquake for cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann? President Hill?
Yes. Item 8B is relief for extraordinary utility billing, consideration of the general manager's recommendation to adjust the current utility billing for property owners experiencing a higher than normal utility billing due to line breakage or leaks. Arnie, would you like to tell us about
you
this
have
one?
Before you a report about one specific instance where we have a request for that kind of determination by the board. This is an account where there was a leak discovered, and the leak was repaired. We generally have the practice of adjusting their water bills to an 18-month average, and you can see the distribution across the board of what was actually billed and what the proposed adjustment would be, and we'd recommend that you go ahead and comply with your request in the matter of this. This property is at 1320 16th Street, and it's Marilyn Martin.
Okay.
Would recommend the board consider that. You also see attached a copy of the repair bill for the leak fix.
Fixing the damage, yes. Okay. Any comment or questions from the board?
She had a $158 water bill for a toilet leak, so it would be a good idea for people to check on those things that are notorious, and they cost you a lot of money.
Yes, they do.
And you can hear them. A lot of times you can hear your toilet leak.
This is one of the few places I've known about where the board actually considers those kind of things and makes the adjustment. Most of the time, we just say sorry.
Yeah.
Pay your bill.
Well, right. Like compounding.
So we need a motion and a second and an approval if you want to
consider. Any comment or questions from the public on this item? Okay, hearing none, then I'll.
I would move that we direct staff to adjust the account listed above reflect charges for the 18-month average as the amount due owing for the March 20th, 2007 through May 17th, 2007 water bill.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously with one absent. Item 8C. Delinquent garbage collection, resolution 2007-15. Consideration of adoption of Oceano Community Services District resolution 2007-15, confirming the delinquent charges associated with collection of solid waste and directing staff to place the charges on the tax roll. Arnie, looks like we have a proper resolution here?
We do, but you have. I just wanted to point out, because I was asked to point it out, Mrs. Noah wrote again and indicated that she wanted the board to be fully aware that she was unhappy with this and she couldn't pay it anyway, no matter where you put it. So it's one of those very sad circumstances, and I have not talked to her in person. I've only gotten both a letter and an email communication from her, and I feel honor bound to at least alert you to that. And
this is which one?
Her bill is
5925
right. On the list. I wouldn't recommend that you adjust it, just that you maybe take a sigh and think good thoughts for her.
Has anyone talked to her about possibly seeking some help from maybe a church or a nonprofit?
No, but we can, if you want, we can certainly suggest that. There's a lot of, as she said, noted in her letter, there's a lot of personal family issues there, and it's unfortunate that the letter is addressed to her deceased husband, but we can't change that because that's the assessor's parcel address that gets applied at the county, mm-hmm. and we don't have any control over that.
At the bottom of the list, Mrs. Munoz,
153017,
$138.28 has also been paid.
And for the anyone perhaps watching this, these are utility bills. The district does not get the money. This goes to the sanitation district, and we just simply collect it for them.
Right.
I have a question. How are these handled? They go on
the taxes.
Tax.
They go on the tax as a lien.
And they would have to pay it as part of their property tax this year, or is it when the
become,
house is
it,
sold?
When it goes on, it would go on probably next year's tax bill.
See.
And then it would be on there as, and if it went to sell it, it would have to be paid to have it cleared for a sales.
It's a lien against their property.
Yes, it is. Yes.
And are there additional fees that the county applies in addition to the?
They would charge interest.
Interest.
Yes, I knew of one person that had a $5 bill that ultimately wound up, as we said earlier, compounding to big money. They were just stubborn and wouldn't pay a late fee. Mm. Not in this agency, in another agency I worked for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these can also be paid in the district office, is that right?
Before they go on the tax lien, they can be paid in the district office. After that, they have to be paid at the county.
Okay.
District office meaning here? Or
yes, here.
And okay, the tax lien goes on when?
As soon as Gina gets the paperwork filed with the county.
Mm-hmm. What actually happens is they will send us approved list, and I if see. Anyone has come in between now and that time,
we'll take them off. So it's not too late if you happen to have gotten that notice.
So there's a time delay between the time that this is filmed and people might see it on Channel 21, but
we're not working that fast with
right,
this,
so there's still have if you see this so in the next week or so, by the end of the month or 1st of August, there's still time to come
and
down
and
to the district.
This is a notice
office.
Hearing, so we need to take that formality also.
Right. Any other comment or questions from the board? Okay, hearing none. Comment or questions from the public? I'll then bring it back to the board and ask for a motion.
One question. If this is a notice type situation, we don't have that listed in our agenda, that this would be the time for anyone to come to the board?
Everyone that has a delinquency on this list was delivered a personal letter.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to adopt OCSD Resolution 2007-15, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Service District confirming the costs associated with the collection of solid waste and disposal, and directing staff to forward the changes to the county auditor for collection.
Okay.
I would second that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve OCSD Resolution 2007-15. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director
Dean?
Yes.
Director
Dahl? Yes.
Director
Mann? Director
Dahl?
Yes. Okay.
You might want to consider reports of district representatives and
I could do that.
We'll move on to the report of district representatives. I attended the Board of Directors meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. The significant action that was taken was approval of the 2007-08 budget. And I have a copy here, which I'll leave with the general manager for the district office. And that's available at the office for inspection. They surplused a transfer truck and an emergency generator that had been long-time equipment. They approved the final process payment for the chlorine contact chamber and effluent pumping station modifications. And the staff in-house is going to fabricate a pump basket strainer rather than purchase it. They believe they can save about $2,500 by fabricating that. The staff at the sanitation plant does quite a bit of fabrication of spare parts. Food service industry would be periodically inspected. Generally, it would be an annual inspection, so that's going to start on August the 1st. And that was discussed here a few weeks ago. So that is about all there is for the San District. Zone 3, I was not able to attend. I thought I would be able to make it last Thursday. I was not able to attend. I don't know, Pamela, were you able to attend that?
I didn't attend, no.
Yeah, my apologies for not being able to be there.
This is the second one that this year that has not been attended?
Right, the last one was canceled.
No, there was one that we had that they had a meeting and there was no quorum because they didn't have enough people attending.
Right.
That only meets every other month.
Mm. Right.
So that means we've had a third of the year where we've had no representation.
Phil, were you able to attend that, the Zone 3? Were you able to attend Zone 3?
Yes, I attended.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I was going to make a short report for myself, really, but I haven't looked at it, my notes, since I got back from the meeting. So right at this moment, I can't really tell you what happened.
All right.
If there's any problems with not being able to get to these meetings, anybody needs to, if we need to reassign them or something, you can always look at that if you want.
Right. I appreciate the suggestion. We may do that.
I would have been able to attend if asked.
Mm-hmm.
So I was prepared to go if I were asked. And I don't know if there should be two of us there at the meeting as backup or what we need to do.
It's never bad to have two people attend the meeting, even right. though one would only be the voting delegate and one would be the alternate.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that basically if you can try to go, and just in the off chance that someone else can't make it. You never know when somebody's going to have a flat tire.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those meetings go on for hours, and sometimes they're rather brief.
And it was right here in Oceano.
Right.
So the meeting was right here. It was an easy one to attend.
Doesn't hurt to have two people in attendance. Might hurt to have three if you're two.
Okay. Bill.
On the seeing that a lot of the cars have been removed, he's been in contact with the property owner. The property owner does not want to see vehicles left on that property. And our fire chief has talked with them, and they've come up with some solutions for in the future to keep the vehicles from being parked on that property. So with that and the fire part, I'm going to turn that over to our fire chief at this point, then I'll come back with our other reports.
Thank you, Director Buckout. During our meeting the other evening, we had a discussion relating to a earlier discussion before my coming here, and it was a concept of a cooperative agreement between the county and the district in emergency response onto the beach. There's reported to me that there's potential funding possible for these services, and I had some discussion and different levels of input from either a board member or the general manager as to where we should go on this, and I thought what I'd best do because of that confusion I had with it is to ask the board for direction on that. And I guess the question boils down to, would the board direct me to continue to see if indeed there are opportunities for a cooperative agreement or some funding for us to respond onto the beach for these off-road vehicle accidents? And that would be my first question.
Yes.
That is a yes from me.
Yes.
And we can do this type of thing. To a consensus of the board on an item that's not on the agenda.
I have to for the council.
I think the only item that we're talking about here is not to make a decision on what we're going to do, is to make a decision on whether he's going to spend any time looking at it. And that's really all we're looking at.
You're looking for a mere consensus.
Yeah. Yeah, which is ultimately what we've been doing for last year, trying to get work with them down there.
Okay.
Okay.
It's not a decision.
Okay. This is something that the supervisors in our meeting, which I'll cover later on when it comes to my turn here, has actually requested us to do.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
In response to a somewhat similar situation, Director Buckout requested that the fire chief inquire about a previous discussion with the state and the district receiving a portion of beach gate entry fees, and in the event we have an aircraft incident either on the airport or off the airport. It's a fair request. The cost of doing this is not very significant, but it would be nice if we could get that type of backing. So I did speak to the assistant airport manager, and he was very, very cooperative and said he would get with the manager and hopefully get back to us. And so I'll keep doing that. The most aircraft accidents are going to occur either during landing or during takeoff. And being that the district and our people that live in the district would be exposed to that in either direction is something that we should probably take a look at for that type of response. Mm-hmm. The fire chief is seeking direction in addressing an audit that I've made of the department program. And I found that we were doing some vehicle mileage reporting every time we moved a wheel. If we had to go around the corner to check with the sheriff's department or something else, we had to fill out the mileage slips. You now have, and I discussed this with the committee members last night, that you have fire officers in charge of the shift who have the responsibility and accountability for the actions of their crews and of their vehicles. If asked, why were you there and why were you there so long, that should be easily answered. And that's their responsibility to answer that question. However, that doesn't mean that we would not continue to track the mileage when we put fuel in the vehicle, so we have an accounting of how many miles we spent on the tank of gas, and that's certainly fair, and that's commonplace. Mm-hmm. But it seems like they spend a lot of time on some of these tasks that are very time-consuming, and my request was, do we need to continue? And there was generally a consensus by the committee that we really don't, but we do need to log our gasoline and our mileage at that time, which tells us the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Are you asking for consensus on that?
No, I was just kind of advising if we did that. If everybody's in agreement, I certainly would bring it up to the board.
That level is a internal management determination. It was just something that was shared with the board at the committee meeting, and now it's being shared with you. For some reason, some time back, someone passed at the management level, passed a rule that says you got to write down your mileage every time you turn out of the station.
So I appreciate that type of an in-depth and look into the situation.
Good. Thank you, sir.
Okay. I think those are typically the kinds of reports that take a lot of time to fill out, and nobody ever looks at them.
Exactly. So and they're almost punitive.
Exactly.
It makes no sense.
And they're not good management practices, and the employees resent them.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to respect the fact that it came from someplace, and I wasn't sure where, so I want to make it public. There were comments from committee members at the fire chief's discretion to abolish the practice, and we did. So that took care of that. Everything will be accounted for. The fire chief desires direction from the district board on the reutilization, on their feelings and thoughts about reactivating or creating a new, what did we call it? We call it a task force that you've used in the past. And because the purpose of my request for that, I was going to make a presentation, or I'm going to make a presentation, hopefully, on August 8th, on some futuring and opportunities for the board to consider in providing services to the community. And because it's not dealing in dollars and not dealing in policy that much, the consensus, I believe, of the committee is that it really isn't necessary and to not do that. So I'm just bringing up in our minutes that's what was discussed.
But in the future, you will get a futuring report from the chief talking about the things at the board level that he would like to bring to you.
Futuring is a word I invented.
Very good. And,
The fire chief also identified a pending program that needs completion, which qualifies the Oceano Community Services District to participate in all future federal funding in the year 2008 in disaster preparedness. I have all the documents of who needs the training, and I'll be pursuing that. The program requires all employees, and I'm going to clarify that again, all employees participate. In short, the classes will take approximately 3 hours per person, and most can be done online. One class will have to be conducted here in the classroom setting. So basically, that's more of an informative thing.
That's
for you,
the NEMA.
To know that that's coming, and we're going to have to address it.
That's the NEM stuff that you referred back to us to follow up on, which is what we're doing.
National Information Management System.
And that's for the 2008 federal.
Pretty good shape, but I believe administrative staff and board members, you know, may want to take a look at it, and I'll get that information to you or to the general manager. A very nice thing happened, and you'll receive this on August 8th, is a document collectively authored by your fire department membership, not the fire chief. Your people got together as part of this program that we're looking at, and the contents include a newly written department mission statement, a value statement, and a department culture created by your firefighters. And it's really exciting and neat to see that these folks have that type of professional attitude and care for their community. And I'll present that to you at that time. The committee members last night said it was very well done and commended the crews for their what they did. It was very nice to hear. On the fire department budget, as I reviewed it, there's a reserve amount, I believe, of $99,000. And a comment that I requested of the committee and would be making of the board is that that money be held in abeyance and that we don't really commit it to anything until after you sit through the August 8th futuring meeting. Not that they would be spent, but if indeed there was opportunities you want to take advantage of, then you would have monies there. So if it was to be, if we could get agreement not to utilize those funds at least for 2 weeks until we get to that program, then you'll need to have some insights as to what you might want to do with it.
Keeping in mind that the whole idea is that this is reserved exclusively to the fire department, not to be used in other departments.
Exactly.
To be used in the fire department.
And that was our understanding at our budget meeting, that we would hold those and wait for you.
Very good.
So we will do that.
That's good to hear. Thank you. Yeah. On old business, we did talk about the parking of the vehicles on Highway 1. By tomorrow morning, there will be two more vehicles gone, and what will be left will be a very large motorhome, which to me, I really don't know on that one. You can't see in, but I believe it's probably been abandoned. And a small motorhome that's sitting there, which will be gone tomorrow morning, a trailer, which definitely has been abandoned, and a half a trailer with a 10-wheel axle underneath it. So, you know, if we had the other half, we could maybe do something, but we don't. We have a half a trailer, and that one is going to be, I'm sure all those will have to be abated. And so that worked very well. And the property owner, also, I talked with him regarding a meeting we had last night, and our general manager brought up a solution. The owner said, I'll do whatever it takes to keep the people out of there and make that a presentable location. And he said we can put in the center highway dividers, the big concrete things, which I felt would end up being graffiti walls, or we can put a chain link fence up, or I'll put up a wooden fence, which probably wouldn't last very long. They'd either get ran into or who knows. And so the general manager came up with a story about they weren't trolls. What were they?
Irish travelers.
Irish travelers, yes.
Arne, you're going to have to tell the story now. It's out, so.
Well, it's very simple. There's a group of people that through Irish legend or Irish fact or whatever are a protected class in Ireland, and they do not like to live in homes. They travel around in 10-foot trailers. They basically are if you know of the Williamson gang that operates in the southeast United States a lot with the phony oil pavement work and the roofs, those are Irish travelers that have gotten over here. And these people are, you can't discriminate against them. They're a protected class. They have they squat on people's lands, and while they're squatting, a lot of things disappear, or people get the opportunity to buy them back. Sometimes they get found. Anyway, they are the way that the Irish people who own the properties take care of keeping them from squatting on their land is that every place that's vacant that you can get to off the road, they place these large rocks. And the first couple of times I went over there, I was wondering, why are these rocks all up and down the road? But it's to keep people from parking on property that they might otherwise squat on. And that's what we had down here, basically, was a group of squatters, whether it was with their cars or with their vehicles that they were living in. So it just popped into my head that, you know, why not solve the problem the same way, is to put some decorative rocks on that property in such a way that people can't get a vehicle between them.
And the property owner, once he heard that, we're talking large boulders, and he said, I can even make them decorative, and I can add some things that will make it look very nice. So he's really been cooperative and appreciates the fact that we're clearing it out for him to a degree. So
you've got to reiterate that with the county, that we as a board do not want to see that the dunes sold to the state. We got to talk about $1 per vehicle and the need for that for our community, which we've talked about in the past. The state has ultimately said, well, you can't have a dollar per vehicle. We would have to change our rules. But the county has the ability to do a lease with the state, and in that lease, they can allot a dollar per vehicle for Oceano. They could take a dollar for the county of San Luis Obispo. So ultimately, we haven't really talked about giving the, you know, seeing the county gets a dollar out of it, but ultimately they need something out of the dunes, and that the state parks right now is currently looking at raising their entrance fees $5. So with that, a dollar per vehicle for Oceano would benefit our fire department dramatically. It would give us a better operating budget. And that's ultimately, Vern talked some about that real strongly up there, and I was really impressed the way he brought it off to the supervisors and the people attending. One of the things they also brought up was alternative access, and the fact that they are supposed to have alternative access, and that Pier Avenue should not be just used as a primary access. They still haven't found an alternative access site. However, they've talked about doing a second entrance on Pier Avenue, and both Vern and myself demonstrated to them that that would not be a benefit to the community. We, at that point, I talked about a recent walk I'd done out in the dunes where I walked out to the middle of the sand dunes and found a trail that led right back up to the state park's ranger station. And this trail, which is we've kind of known about, our fire department uses it occasionally to get out on the beach, is ultimately a road. And when I brought this up, the two supervisors in attendance, Jerry Lenthal and Mr. Gimson, were not aware of this particular trail. And it makes pretty easy sense to alleviate some of the congestions on Pier Avenue by possibly making that a one-way in and then come off the beach onto Pier Avenue, leaving the beach. That trail or south of Oceano, which to me is the ultimate, because that would then provide additional campsites for our community. And we talked about some of the people that are camping along our streets on Pier Avenue and the adjacent areas down there. If we had additional campsites, what a benefit that would be, and allow those people to get off the streets and find camping on big weekends. I'll turn the rest of my report on this over to Vern, and that's it for me.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. Okay. This was a very promising meeting. It's very, I was very happy to be able to be there, and that the county took their time out and to talk just with us here in Oceano, and in their in looking at the state beach. So it was very, very promising, and we owe them a big thank you for doing that and for listening to us. The meeting became pretty obvious that the county is looking very hard at how the park has been run and how it affects the communities around the park, and they are looking at what has been promised. And so when it was originally leased 25 years ago, and
and what the what has been done, what hasn't been done, what you know, and what needs to be done as far as the impacts to the community. And one of the things that they're interested, or a few of the things that they're interested in receiving from us, is they would like to know the number of fire calls that we have on the beach and what they are, and you know, what we do down there. And they, on several occasions throughout the meeting at different points in time, encouraged us to look for OHV money. And they encouraged us to look at the money that the county has received and is interested in, even if we, if there's something that we need, they would even put it on a fast track to try to get it to us for use on the beach there. They encouraged us to talk to Andy Zilke and take a look at, see, he would know what other grants are available for the fire department. Individuals ask if a dollar would be enough, and wanted to know where that dollar came from, where that figure of $1 originated at, and would be interested in seeing what it would take, how much money it would take to service the beach. So I think that would be a good little look into what it would cost us to service that beach, and at what levels of service what amount of money would buy. And then they they gave us a write-up that we had done 25 years ago, February 4th, 1982, and a letter that we had written from the board as well, that outlined what some of the impacts were to the community, and some recommendations that we had made back then. And they're interested and would like to know if there's any, you know, what the specific impacts are today and at this point in time. And they also wanted us to give them any observations that we had on the beach as far as how things were working and running out there. Those were the requests that they had from us. They also mentioned that, you know, if we had any, they were interested in how the dispatch worked, and if we had any dispatch issues or something, you know, to contact John Callahan, and they gave me the phone number, and you know, if there's anything that can be helped out with on that end. That was the main part of the conversation that you know, that we brought, that we really tried to push, was to look for some permanent funding for here for Oceano on this. And I'm encouraged as far as, you know, as far as it has gone at this point in time. So that's basically all I have for that issue. Bill, did you have anything else before I continue with mine?
That's good.
Okay. All right, the Airport Land Use Commission meeting was canceled. And then we also had an Oceano Advisory Council meeting on July 17th. And at that meeting, there's an act, which is an act that is basically, it's a bill that was passed in 1965 at the state level, and it's a voluntary program between private landowners and local government, and it's a way to preserve agricultural land by giving a property tax reduction to participating landowners. And this is the number one program which keeps farmland agricultural. And what they're wanting to do is change some of their rules as far as you know, how many residents are allowed, and it's to match, to closer match what the state rules, state laws are. This is from an amendment to it called the Laird Bill. And it's going to have tighter controls over structural items not related to ag. It's going to clarify changes in types of farming, issues of discontinuous properties will be addressed. They're going to give larger discounts for if they stay in the act longer. Right now, it's like 10 years, and if you're going to take your property out of the act, it takes it's a 10-year process to do that, and then slowly property taxes are increased over that 10-year period until you're out. It's going to update the allowable uses and the non-allowable uses. It's going to allow nurseries and ag auction sites and these type of things. And so they're updating that. They came down and gave us a presentation on it. We're going to have some stuff probably in the future coming from the county on the smart growth element that the county is trying to bring into their general plan. Amendments are proposed by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend framework for planning, which is part one of the land use and circulation elements of the county general plan, to incorporate smart growth principles, implementing actions and strategies into chapters or sections, including general goals, public service considerations for expansion of urban and village areas, circulation element policies on pedestrian, get that close enough in communities so people can walk or bike or have alternate transportation to get to services. And so they're in the public review draft portion of it, and they're going to be coming up with some hearings. The Planning Commission study happened on July 12th, and then the 17th they brought this to the Advisory Council. The Planning Commission's a public hearing, they're holding a public hearing on August 9th, and then the Board of Supervisors public hearing will be September 25th. There's a couple websites that if somebody wants to go look at this item, that can see how it's going to affect the different areas and how it works. And the two websites are www.smartgrowth.org, and the other website would be www.slowplanning.org, and those two places will get you more information on this. And let's see. That pretty much takes care of my reports. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Vern. Pamela?
I attended the Zone 11A Advisory Committee. That was July 17th. And the big news for us is we have a coastal development permit waiver, which is really big news. We get to begin thinning the willows in the coastal area of the creek. And that thinning began on July 17th, so we're working our way from the coastal area, which is down by the Guyton property, and we're working our way inland. This is something we have to do every year to allow more flow of water through the creek and to give us more flood protection. It helps a little bit. The next thing they talked about were gates that we're going to put on the levee of the Zone 1A Creek. The gates are all going to be new. We found out that we could not repair gates reasonably, so they will all have new gates. The gates will be, and we will sign the gates, and we're going to sign the levee, and it's going to say this. Even if you're walking, it is private property. It has been used, however, for a long time by people. So I just wanted to let everybody know this is coming up. This will be this summer. Our big thing for the Zone 11A is our RFQs, requests for qualifications. We're going to submit a request for qualifications for a consultant team to do our environmental document. Our environmental document is, I'm told, one of the best. We have every permit required
here in Oceano and in the Zone 11A. So they're saying, oh, this is a plum job. It means a lot of work for whoever's getting the job. They're going to solicit these requests for qualifications beginning August 17th. It takes about a three-month process. We've kind of been through this with the general manager process, and it's the same thing here. So they begin with submittals. They do an initial ranking. They do a short list, and select the panel. And that's going to happen in, that will be September 31st. And then we go from there. It's, the selected panel then has to be approved by the Zone 1A people, and the Board of Supervisors has to say, okay, it's okay to spend, to send this out to, for money. The other thing that we've been working on for a very long time is bylaws, Zone 11A bylaws. We've been working them over for 6 months, and after working them over that long, we decided we boxed ourselves into a corner, and we're not going to make any changes to the bylaws, so we'll just leave them as they are.
It's an odd solution.
And it has to do with the weight of the membership. The weight of the membership is supposed to be for those owners who have large acreages. So they will have more say because the large acreages are the ones that get flooded. So, and there are not too many of those people. So we found out that I guess our bylaws worked pretty well, and we're just going to stand by those. So that's...
Just we do is maybe take a 10-minute break.
Very good.
Checking in here,
we
10
could
minutes.
Still do 11 and 13 if you wanted to.
I think.
And then that'll postpone things maybe a little bit, and then I would suggest a break long enough for her to get here.
First of all, is there any questions or comments from board members on the reports?
Or the public.
Or from the public. I did. Vernie said that the county had looked at seeing 75% of trips from home are like 1 mile. That's
or within 1 mile. Yeah.
Within 1 mile. That really surprises me.
Yeah.
That. I'm glad to see the coastal development permit waiver and the starting. Just. A word to everybody, the posting that Pamela mentioned, the levees are the primary protection for many of our residents in the low-lying areas along the creek, and the trespassing and riding of motor vehicles and so forth on the levees has damaged the levees, and it reduces the flood protection. So that's the reason why it's necessary to take that action and to try to block access to the levees, is that it damages the primary flood protection for the residents right along the creek, and it could cause catastrophic damage to them. So I'm glad to see that some action is hopefully going to try to protect their residences there.
Yes, and we just raised the levee, so it's all brand new and right. All compacted and all beautiful, and we don't want ruts in the levees, and there seem to be motor vehicles behind the mobile home parks that come in.
One of your great blessings is getting the permission to clear the willows, because those willows are one of the fastest growing trees that there are, and they give us absolute fits in Grover and the creek that flows down on the freeway side of mm-hmm. the town. And it was getting coastal permits to clean those and fish and game permits to clean those was like, yeah. You would think we were killing someone.
Well, we're hoping it will be easier year after year as we show them how it works and what the look is to the creek, because it still gives a nice canopy over the creek, but it also allows free flow of water. And they didn't seem to understand that at all too well, that willows grow back really fast.
Be able to live in the creek. Now, when they raised the levees, Pamela, they raised them on both sides?
They raised them mostly on the north side because the south side has to be lower for the floodwaters to go over it. So that is our natural weir, so to speak.
Yeah. When we had that levee break on the south side of the levee, which was caused by a tree trunk.
Yeah, films.
Yeah, it was observed, the water going over the top of the levee on the north side of the levee prior to that break. So it's, you know, in some ways it may have been fortunate that that trunk did break the levee on the south side, mm-hmm. because it may have broke on the north side otherwise. Right. And restriction on the bank, is that going to include the horses that are going down there?
The horses will still be allowed to cross the creek and go out to the beach, as I understand it.
So the what about the bicyclists that use from the beach up to that area? Are they eliminated?
Well, there are a lot of walkers, bicyclists, dog walkers. Everybody will be likely to be sighted if you're out there. You're not going to be, you know, a given dispensation. The sheriff is planning to just ticket everyone, or he may give you a notice to say that, you know, this is private property, you can't walk along here. But at least he has a way to remove squatters, and we don't have rocks down there to put in there.
And also, I think the motor vehicles that were being operated on the levee, specifically motorbikes and so forth, have caused a lot of damage to the levees over the years. Part of the reason it had to be rebuilt, and that it costs a lot of money to rebuild the levees and raise them up like that. And that just causes a lot of expense and danger to the residents along the creek. So it's
like
good to hear that.
Like most laws where you have to make rules for the few destructive parts, mm-hmm. and restrict everybody. Walking down there probably is not going to hurt that much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if you walk down there, then that will lead to motor vehicles and four-wheelers and all of those things that are a lot of fun and shouldn't be.
They can generally operate those in the SVRA, though.
They have nothing. Yes.
Oh. Very good.
Yes. This was her 24th anniversary, correct? So she'll look forward to the end of the year will be her 25th, and I think you have to celebrate it with a big party.
Now, can we give her some sort of a resolution thanking her the 25 years and looking forward to the next 25?
Next July 25th will be the
25th anniversary. Okay.
Good deal.
But you should mark it in your calendar.
Absolutely.
Have a party. I'll be.
Okay. Any other public comment first on the director's report? Okay. Hearing none. Any other board member items for discussion? And I think we've done the warrants already. Is that correct?
We didn't do the warrants. We just accepted the financial report. Was that the warrants included in that?
No, the warrants are
in
the minutes.
Okay. So we haven't done the warrants.
Okay. Any additional public comment? Hearing none there. So looks like a good time for a break. We'll take 10 minutes, would you suggest?
I would suggest we take a minimum of 10 and... reconvene when our fifth director gets back.
Okay, we will take a break. Director's reports, I guess, if you want to do that, or, okay.
In terms of our water issues in South San Luis Obispo County and northern Santa Barbara County, this issue has been discussed, cussed, and fought over for at least 30 years that I'm aware of. And we are getting to the point with a judge's decision where this issue will come to a fruition and be placed into the legal record and doing this. One of the issues relates to the concept that our groundwater basin has to be protected. We have never been in this part of the area in a situation where the groundwater has ever been overutilized to the point of having it become a problem. And it's because in the past we've had good stewards of the water and the groundwater in all of the agencies here. One of the issues of the litigation was the concept that we would have to come together with some sort of way to assure that that particular aspect continued. And that's what this is all about. This is the issue of the groundwater monitoring to make sure that we are still doing the right thing and nobody's straw is taking more than they should. Our staff of Todd Engineers has been working on the program for a long time, and she will give you a presentation on the status of the monitoring and reporting program, which I would point out is a requirement of the adjudication by the judge. So it's not something that we can ignore or not follow up with. It's something we have to do. We'd ask you to listen to her presentation, and then we'll go from there. And we might want to turn the lights down a little bit if we can.
Mr. President, directors, it is my pleasure to be here tonight to talk to you about groundwater. And Arnie, thank you so much for the big picture. It has been my pleasure to serve the northern cities as your expert witness on groundwater issues as part of the Santa Maria adjudication. And I served alongside of Dr. David Keith Todd, who was your other expert witness. And together, we supported you in your independent management of this groundwater basin. You've been doing it for years, and we thought engineers to do this report and understood, you know, the importance of looking at the water balance. We understood that water balance studies had been done before. So we proceeded in a very systematic way, step by step, working with the staff of not only Oceano, but Arroyo Grande, Pismo, and Grover. So I appreciate their support. So with that, I'd also like to acknowledge that this was a team effort that included Maureen Riley, our senior engineer, and Jesse Cruz, a staff geologist. So I'd like to provide you with an overview of the water balance. And what a water balance is looking at a particular area, looking at the inflows of water, looking at the outflows of water, and then looking at the change in storage. So we'll go over each one of those components. Then I'd like to talk about the concept of safe yield, and then talk about some of the recommendations for the monitoring program that Arnie mentioned. So this is our study area, and it's the Northern Cities area, which is rimmed here in red, and it is consistent with the area that was defined for you in the Santa Maria adjudication. But what I'd like to point out is a really different land use across the Northern Cities area. So up in the north is the pink, and that's the urban area, basically. Then there's the crescent of green, which is the agricultural area. And then to the south is a native vegetation and dunes. So very different land use across your study area. So I want to take this map view that you're looking at and rotate it so it's like a block diagram and talk to you a little bit about the water balance.
Ta-da. So if we took a slice underneath the northern cities, well, this is what it would look like. And underneath the entire study area is groundwater, saturating all of the sands and silts and clays and the rocks underlying northern cities. So let's look at first at some of the inflows to this block, to this volume. Well, that's Arroyo Grande Creek, and it's a source of stream infiltration, particularly in a reach that goes from about Highway 101 down to the 22nd Bridge. This is where it really percolates. You get further towards the ocean, there's a clay layer underneath there. It doesn't percolate as well. So this is an important part of the recharge of your groundwater basin. But it's not all. Well, of course, it rains. And when it rains, the water falls onto the nice dunes that you've got in this area, and it infiltrates. That's another source of recharge. And it's particularly important, as you might imagine, on those areas of dunes where it can really soak in. So those are the dune areas there where infiltration is quite important. Rain, of course, also falls on the urban areas. Some of the rain falls on pavement, and it goes into your stormwater system and out to the ocean. In some of the cities, like Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, they have percolation ponds that capture stormwater. And then, of course, there's infiltration on the agricultural areas, another important source of recharge. So I'm showing right here, you see those little yellow rectangles, those are indicative of the percolation ponds that Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach have right in the center of the city. You know, they're percolating about 300 acre feet per year. You know, not bad. Now, in addition, there is what we call return flow, that people are provided water in their homes. They use some inside, some outside, and some of the water that's used outside for irrigation, well, they over-irrigate a little bit, and some of it returns to the groundwater. That's the return flow, and we computed that for the urban areas. And in fact, you know, there's a lot of documentation and methodology in this report that probably more than you want to read. But it's all there. So if you do want to read it, if you do want to understand, or some of your constituents do, or other consultants, it's here. There, of course, are return flows from agriculture. No farmer is a perfect irrigator. Some of the water will percolate past the plants and return to the groundwater basin. And then there's subsurface inflow. Essentially, groundwater is flowing from the Napomo and Santa Maria Valley areas towards the ocean, and it flows, you know, from the Napomo Mesa area underneath the northern cities and out to the ocean. So there's this continual slow flow of groundwater underneath the northern cities, which brings me to outflow. And of course, subsurface outflow is an important factor here. Other outflows are going to be municipal pumping. The wells, that I guess you have some wells here in Oceana, don't pump them a whole lot, I understand, but Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, even Pismo Beach has municipal wells in the basin, and they pump water out. And that's what these pumps indicate. And then the agricultural areas, more pumping. In the cities over our study period, which was about 20 years long, the cities were pumping on average about 2,200 acre feet per year. The agriculture, about 3,300 acre feet per year. So at that, those are the outflows. So I just want to run down through the numbers to just basically give you an idea of what it looks like. So the different inflows, you can see stream infiltration, about 2,000 acre feet per year, the most important, followed pretty closely by a deep percolation of rainfall. Infiltration basins, again, about 300 acre feet. Then the return flows, are significant, 1,100 acre feet, mostly from agriculture, and then subsurface inflow, 3,500 acre feet. So overall, we're looking at about 8,500 acre feet per year flowing into this basin on average every year over the study period. Outflows, there's fewer of them. While we had subsurface inflow, we also had the subsurface outflow, about 3,000 acre feet per year. And then the pumping, where it's pumped out of the ground and then consumed, 5,600 acre feet per year, and I gave you those numbers before. That's kind of averages over the study period. And I would mention that the urban pumping averaged 2,300 acre feet per year, but it's been going up. So it's about 3,300 acre feet per year, too. And if there's questions that you have, please interrupt. You know, I'm happy to field any questions you have. So the outflows are also about 8,500 acre feet per year. Now, there's one outflow that's really important in this basin, and it's subsurface outflow. And the reason it's important, this is the outflow out to the ocean, is that the subsurface outflow of fresh groundwater controls seawater inflow. I mean, it prevents seawater intrusion that could potentially degrade the groundwater quality that you have under the northern cities. Now, it's not a simple relationship. It's affected by, you know, where your pumping wells are. Well, in this basin, a lot of them are back off of the coast. I mean, no one is going to put a well on the beach because then you're certain to get seawater. It's affected by pumping amounts. And in this basin, we wanted to quantify as best we could what these different outflows and inflows are. Let's put a number on it. Well, frankly, when it came to subsurface inflow and outflow, this is a bit of an uncertain number. There's a lot of different variables in it, and it's one that we would like to firm up and understand better. It's important, again, we have this threat of seawater intrusion in the area. Again, it's just a potential, and really shows the need for having sentry wells to monitor water levels and water quality along the coast. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. But I want to illustrate this for you. So let's take this as a slice through your groundwater basin. So you can see at the top is mean sea level here. And so the land surface is going to be up there. This is the shoreline. So this slice goes from the shore to about 10,000 feet inland, about 2 miles inland. And you're looking at a sideways slice. Here's a municipal well pumping away. And here's a sentry well. Now, this is all very schematic. And what I'd like to point out here, besides the municipal well and the sentry well, is that this is fresh water. And again, it's very slowly moving its way out. And then it daylights somewhere out underneath the ocean floor. And then underneath it somewhere is seawater. Now, in this case, this is just a hypothetical schematic diagram. But we know the seawater's out there. Now, I don't know that it's at the shoreline. That's a very conservative assumption to make. But let's just pretend that we've got a sentry well and it tells us that the seawater is there. Now, where is it? Offshore, somewhere. Where? I don't know. Nobody does. Now, you'll notice that the seawater is like a wedge underneath the freshwater, and that's because it's denser. So as it starts to come into a groundwater basin, it's going to slide in along the bottom of an aquifer. And again, this is very, very simplified. And displace the lighter freshwater up. So you'll still have freshwater flowing out while seawater pushes in. Now, this is a hypothetical picture where I'm saying that we've got 3,000 acre-feet per year of subsurface outflow, and that's what our estimate is. Okay, so this is a good situation here. We can actually compute this. Let's say that the subsurface outflow were less. Now, how does subsurface outflow become less? Well, it can become less if there's more pumping, so that, you know, the water is being intercepted and taken out of the ground. If it's coming out of the well, it's not going out to the ocean. It can be less if there's a drought, you know, or some situation like that. Okay, so let's move ahead. Instead of 3,000 acre-feet per year subsurface outflow, let's look at 600 acre-feet per year. Again, this is something that we can compute, and you'll notice that the seawater intrusion wedge has come 4,000 feet inland. Again, it's sliding in along the bottom. But we would be able to tell with our sentry well. Now, the pumping well is sitting here, and if it's just pumping along, it might be okay. If it pumps too hard, you can imagine it could start to suck up salt water. And that well would be contaminated with seawater. Okay, that's 600 acre-feet per year, which, is very, very much less than what we have. Let's look at another situation, 200 acre-feet per year. Well, in this situation, you can see that there's seawater more than 10,000 feet inland in the groundwater basin. The freshwater is just a thin lens on top. The municipal well is now pumping brackish water and is ruined. This is a catastrophic situation. I'd also like to point out that 200 acre feet per year is what was indicated for seawater, for subsurface outflow under the original gentleman's agreement. So this number doesn't work. It was an estimate. We do not know, even though we looked at all the other water balances that were done previously, we don't know exactly where this number came from. I would say it was a placeholder without a lot of documentation. But it's a placeholder that was way too small. It just doesn't work. Okay. Change in storage is the rest of the water balance. Inflow minus outflow is change in storage. So now we recognize that groundwater levels fluctuate. They go down in drought, they come up in wet years, etc. We looked over a study period that went from about 1986 to about 2004, and we found no net change. And we did it two ways. One way, we did all of the inflows that I just talked to you about, all of the outflows. We took the difference, and it came up to be zero. Then we thought, we're going to do an independent check. So we looked at water levels in wells, the ones that are monitored by the county, and got an independent check, no net change over the study period. This is good news. It's a stable situation. Now let's talk about safe yield. Because safe yield is a number that I think people mostly have a sense of it. This is the amount of water that we can pump safely, right? Okay, and in fact, the historical gentleman's agreement said the safe yield is 9,500 acre-feet per year. And this is the number that has stood for many, many years as kind of the picture of how much recharge do we have, and this is the amount of groundwater we have available to us. Well, our study came up with a current inflow estimate of 8,500 acre-feet per year. Now, you'd say, well, we lost 1,000 acre-feet per year in there. But from a hydrologist's point of view, these numbers are really, really similar. You know, we're in the same ballpark. You know, we're feeling actually pretty good about this. But really, the point that I'd like to make to you tonight is it's very difficult to deal with a single fixed number. This is just an average. It's not a wet year. It's not a dry year. This is just what is happening now. And I suggested to you that a more fluid view is needed of water in this situation. And this is partly because water can be managed. It is managed by you. If more percolation ponds are put in and more water is percolated, well, there's more water going into the groundwater system, and maybe you can take more out. So we can recognize the effects of management and then start balancing groundwater use and protection. We want to be able to use this resource for beneficial purposes, agricultural, municipal uses, et cetera, and we want to protect it and keep the seawater intrusion out. So that, I think, is what safe yield ought to be about. And really, how do we know when we're really managing? It's through monitoring. And that's where we're going to be going in this discussion. Because we have made recommendations to you. And the first one, the next step, is to fund and implement the monitoring program. Now, this is something that, as Arnie mentioned, is mandated by the judge. But it's also a very good thing to do. Imagine getting a state of the basin report every year so that you know what the conditions are. Groundwater levels, how much is in storage, you know, are the levels going up and down? Has it been a drought or not? And then with this kind of information, you can make the best use of the data you have. Now, we wouldn't build one from scratch. The fact is that the county already does a lot of monitoring. So let's just use their information. And in fact, if you have wells, well, you do some monitoring also. We would use that information and incorporate it in a comprehensive program. Put it all in a database, update the database, and then streamline this so that we can get the information out to you promptly in a way that everyone can understand and make use of. Because we recognize what these data are for is to guide and support your management decisions about how to manage the groundwater resource with the other cities. So we did have some specific recommendations in our report, specifically for monitoring. And one of them was consider additional wells for monitoring. I mentioned earlier that when we were trying to understand subsurface inflow and subsurface outflow, that those are estimates. If we had more wells, and these can be existing wells, to monitor, we could understand those very large flows. Again, 3,000 acre feet out of 8,500 acre feet is significant. And it's a significant uncertainty. We'd get a better handle on subsurface inflow from Nipomo, which, by the way, is a very good idea because there's more and more pumping, I understand, in the Nipomo area. Is that going to affect the northern cities? It's a good question. And then on the other end, there are existing sentry wells, two or three, along the coast. They have been monitored for water levels, but not quality. Now, when we're talking about seawater intrusion, we're talking about salts, chloride and sodium, boron, increasing potentially in the wells. Let's get out there and not only measure levels, but get some water quality samples as a baseline. So if there's a change, we'll be on top of it. Then another thing is we suggested conduct additional stream gauging. Again, percolation through Arroyo Grande Creek is an important source of inflow. And it's one also that potentially might change with the habitat conservation plan and other changes. So we'd like to know that number better too. So recommendations for management, again, use the data to inform your management decisions. For the other cities and potentially Oceana, expand the infiltration basin system. It's a good thing. It not only recharges your groundwater basin, but it means that you don't have those destructive storm flows heading out the creek and eroding it, or flooding places that you know, you'd rather not see flooded. And then also manage use of groundwater and surface water supplies. And I recognize that the northern cities already are doing that, that you've got imported water, Lopez water, local groundwater, and that you do judge which to use at what time in a conjunctive sort of way. And then, of course, plan and prepare for droughts. It's been extremely dry. Hopefully this will be a one-year drought and not a prolonged drought. So with that, we can assess impacts on groundwater quality from pumping, potentially look at more groundwater development. Perhaps we can pump more groundwater, but again, we need to protect against seawater intrusion. So with that, I would be very happy to hear any comments that you might have, entertain any questions. Thank you.
Okay, first questions from the board.
I had a question about, we have many wells here. I just wonder if Phil can fill us in on whether those are being monitored or if they would be considered to be maybe a part of your management system.
Well, we take a general mineral, but ourselves could you use the mic?
It was pretty short. We do monitor our wells. We test them for, what are you looking for, chloride and sodium ion? Yeah. We're only required to do it every 3 years, but, you know, we could do it more often. And years ago, we used to monitor wells right across the street here at the ice company for seawater intrusion. That was when they were going to build Lopez. Mm-hmm. So it's not a new thing, like you stated.
Well, thank you. I mean, we would look forward to pulling in existing monitoring that you're already doing, mm-hmm. both water quality, as was mentioned, including the monitoring that you're doing ongoing, you're required to, every 3 years, historical data. I mean, we're very interested in finding whatever historical data that you might have in your files. But again, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. This is more a matter of pulling the information together, then putting it out in a regular report, in a, not a big, thick report, but a thin report that, you know, the whole community can understand. That would be a state of the basin. And also it would be submitted to the judge, you know, in you know, as part of the judge's ongoing water master duties in this basin.
And what does the judge do if you find that the inflow that goes out to the ocean is diminishing due to overpumping, say, or something like that? What happens then?
I would imagine that if we saw groundwater levels declining, especially near the coast, that you, the northern cities, would be on top of that situation immediately. You wouldn't wait for the judge to tell you what to do. It's your groundwater basin. And, of course, he would have the power. Mm-hmm. I assume we should have legal counsel talk about, you know, what he could do.
But we would need the information, so it seems like it would be good for our wells to be monitored as much as possible, so that we can protect ourselves here, too.
Just a comment, if I might. It's absolutely amazing to go to the meetings of these technical people that run the water systems around here and sit around and listen to, first of all, how concerned they are, how competent they are, and how on top of our personal situations that they are. It's just absolutely, to me amazing that you have a dedicated group of government employees who get no fanfare, they get no public recognition, but they make sure our taps run every day of the week.
Well, and the other thing here is we do have detention basins in Oceano, and any new development has to have retaining basins to keep all the stormwater on site. It does not, you can have 10% maybe go into the street, but anyone building a new subdivision has to retain stormwater, which again percolates into the ground. So that part is good, but we still have a lot of flooding here. There's a lot we can do, as Bill can attest.
It's a very wise policy to detain stormwater and then make sure it percolates, you know, as much as possible. And you can do it here. Mm-hmm. The cities are built in part on dunes that are very permeable. So it's a very good situation for that kind of water management.
I'm going to play deputy attorney here. And what happens in please, both of the other attorneys, correct me if I'm wrong, but what happens with an adjudication is that the judge retains control of that in the court system forever. And if there is any major issues, the judge can reopen up all of that. That's what the monitoring is for, is so that the judge can be assured. This is the second one of these I've been through, so it's an amazing process. And it's a wonderful process when you can get it done, because everybody can maybe stop fighting a little bit until they know where they're going to be.
It is a maybe. With water, there are more fights with water than gold.
Yes.
You mentioned the creek and the storage of water in the creek. Upstream of the 22nd Bridge, has that been looked at with the Zone 11A as far as clearing out the channel so that they can get more of the sedimentation out of there to possibly store more water for our aquifer system?
We were actually looking at the infiltration of the water through the bottom of the channel, and it had been studied once, decades ago, by what's called the Hoover study. And then we thought, well, we'd like to see, you know, what this is. We measured the percolation again as part of this study. The amount of percolation that happens in a stream channel is going to be a function of a number of things. You want a permeable bottom, you know, nice sandy bottom. That's why it's very permeable above the 22nd Street Bridge up to about Highway 101. You get up into Arroyo Grande, and you know where the swinging bridge is. Well, that's rock. Yeah. And there's not a lot of percolation up there. So it really does happen in that reach. Now, the channel is operated to some degree for flood control. It's operated for conveyance of water from Lopez to farmers. There's beneficial uses that have been mentioned earlier tonight, you know, for habitat, recreation, even if they are walking along the levees. There's a lot of different multiple uses of that channel. Now, if it were used only for, say, water management, for groundwater, then I'll bet that, you know, you probably could increase the percolation. Now, it's done different ways. In the Santa Ana River is a wonderful example in Orange County, where it's a very wide river, and they're able to control the flows because they have Prado Dam. They release water out gradually so that it's always a little bit wet. They put in small berms, just like little sandbags across the river, to spread the water out. So they've increased the duration that the channel is wet. They've increased the area that the channel is wet. And then they maximize percolation. So that can be done. Now, is it what should be done on this creek with all of its multiple beneficial uses? Boy, that is a question. I mean, I think it would be actually, that would be quite a project. It would be difficult, I would think, to get through all of the environmental review. So in some ways, it's operating now. Lopez releases are coming gradually down the stream, especially now that they've got it for the fish also. And that helps maximize or at least increase the percolation. But you're right, it could be operated for recharge.
It's amazing how things work sometimes with unintended consequences, because I was there and I know what the thinking was at the time. The drainage basins that we so highly tout nowadays as a way of repercolating the groundwater basin were really intended to control flooding. And it just turned out that there was this consequence of groundwater percolation that we thought about after the fact. So it's, like I said, it's an unintended consequence, but in this case, it's a very good one.
I have a more mundane question. Your study would be shared among all the four northern cities, would be Pismo, Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Oceano. Is that
correct?
Correct. So then the cost would be apportioned.
I believe our percentage is 16.5%.
I believe it's allocated according to your gentleman's agreement.
Formula.
The formula for how much water each
whatever.
How much water each entity draws.
Mm-hmm. I have had a couple questions also. Now, when you're talking about these monitoring wells, and you're talking about wells that are pumping water out of the ground. And if those wells are close to where your seawater infiltration is, that's going to pump a cone out from that area, raising the seawater level underneath that well. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're describing what we call upconing.
Okay. And so when you're looking at monitoring wells, are you looking at wells that are not used?
Preferentially, yes.
Okay.
You know, in the best of all worlds, I'd have a network of monitoring wells, particularly along the coast. They wouldn't be pumped. They would be dedicated monitoring wells. But let's face it, that's expensive. And so what we do is we get along with monitoring, you know, existing wells. And in some cases, they are production wells. In some cases, they're, you know, wells that aren't used very much. There are some dedicated monitoring wells, so it's a little bit of a mixture.
Okay. And the wells now, they have perforations up and down parts of them, but not the entire well itself.
Well, there are some wells out there that probably screen from 50 feet down to the bottom of the well.
Okay.
For a monitoring well, we'd want to target a certain vertical zone. So when we have to monitor a well that has a very long screen, what we're getting is a picture of a great depth of aquifer, when we'd really rather focus in on a particular zone. But again, you know, that's something where we recognize the problems and we just deal with it.
Okay. Now, we're looking at desal here in the Five Cities area, and in which case we will be putting in wells along the coast area. It won't be water pulled directly out of the ocean, but it'll be pulled out of wells close to the ocean.
Right.
And then we end up with the brackish water.
Correct.
Now, is this going to affect this groundwater basin? And if it is, either positive or negatively, or how does that affect it?
Well, I would imagine, I mean, we're working on similar projects up in the Monterey area where they're looking at exactly the same issues you are, where you don't want to have an ocean intake that, you know, sucks up all the water and all the organisms too. So the idea is put in beach wells, because coming through the beach sand, the water's filtered for you. Also, it's not pure seawater. At 35,000 parts per million salts, it might be 10,000. Well, that means less desal for you to do. So this is something that would be looked at in an environmental impact report. If they are beach wells, it's hard to imagine that there would be, you know, a significant issue there if they're shallow. What you would be doing with a pumping well is you would be potentially pulling in some seawater. Again, depending on the location of the well, where is the well screened, how hard is it pumped, pulling in some brackish water and pulling in some fresh water. If it's maintained that way, then you would have an equilibrium situation. But again, there's a lot of variables.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Comment or questions from the public? It's like we're...
If I might share with the board where we are next, we've had this monitoring plan designed, some preliminary estimates of cost. In the next few months, weeks, days, however long it takes, the technical people that work with this stuff will be meeting on this issue and other issues related to this adjudication. We're still awaiting for the judge to finally sign off on it. I understand that it could occur at any moment, but it's sort of like the birth of a child. It's greatly anticipated, and you have no control over it when it happens. It's a good day. It's my wedding anniversary, so it's a perfect day to remember. But in any case, once that happens and we have this formal situation in place, then what you will get back is your next reporting process as to how the agencies jointly are going to go forward on this.
Mm-hmm. Are we looking at drilling some monitoring wells?
That's in the plan to consider, but those decisions have not anywhere close to being made yet.
Yeah, I would suggest that we would first look with this monitoring program at using the data we have, you know, ready to us. Put it together, see where we are. Then start looking at existing wells. And again, we recognize that, you know, there's problems with production wells and long screens and access. You know, but if we can deal with that, then those are very cost-effective monitoring points. And if they fall in the right place, well, let's use them. But then there are some key areas where we'd like to have really good data. That's where you start looking at monitoring wells, dedicated monitoring wells. Well, depending on how many, how deep, et cetera, you know, those could be expensive items. This is where, you know, we can start looking around for available grants. And I would think that the northern cities, with their ongoing management, their proven track record, that you would be able to get some grant money to help you out with that.
Jeannie, you have a question.
Actually, my question is to Phil. Is the observation well across the street any good for those four different levels?
Place to monitor. I've talked to Jim Gearing about this, of course, already. We're waiting for the plan to come up with. But the well is a little farther than the ocean we would like. It's probably what's right here.
Just as a general thought as to how I think it might go looking into the future is that you probably will get some test wells done as a part of your desal study, which could turn into monitoring wells.
The current monitoring well that you mentioned, Gina, where's that located at?
Actually, there are four different levels. So it's on the depot property across the street.
You think that, is there going to be some coordination between the two then? Or can we make sure there's coordination between the two?
You're going to be, the same people are going to be dealing with both issues. Mm-hmm. So I can't see how it wouldn't happen.
Okay, good.
It's the same agencies, the same staff.
So in your presentations to Arroyo Grande and the other cities, have you made any of those yet or are they on schedule?
At this point, I've made presentations to the cities of Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach, and not yet Grover Beach.
Mm-hmm. So then What we need to do then is probably wait until the presentation is made to Grover, and then all of the participants will get together and work out how the details would work.
And those meetings are already being scheduled, and discussions are being held on this subject and others as it relates to this whole water concept program. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those are ongoing, and they'll get more focused once the judge signs off.
When the judge signs off, a clock starts ticking.
Yes.
To get the monitoring plan to him for his approval.
So it has to get approved by all the parties, and it has to get accepted by the judge.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And it can't be started until he has signed off.
The actual monitoring program, as I understand, needs to be submitted to the judge, but you've got monitoring going on. I would start planning tomorrow.
Yeah, we're monitoring already. We were monitoring last week and last month. I mean, the amazing thing is that this whole thing is set up as a gentleman's agreement. Right, wrong in terms of the numbers, was a swag, scientific, wild, actuarial guess. But the whole concept of this thing has been a thing of beauty to see that it actually worked. We've had droughts, we've had floods, we've had everything, and the water still flows, and we've been able to build on it. But now we're getting more technical about how we look at this stuff. And you're right, it was a politically driven set of numbers, but that's the only thing we could do back then. Mm. And somehow or other, we survived.
It sounds like it worked exceptionally well through today and on into the future, but due to the litigation, we need to have a more formal monitoring system, which this will provide. So,
and the monitoring could prove that we were wrong in terms of our numbers in either direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, thank you very much, Iris. We very much appreciate the presentation. And we'll.
And
I appreciate your attention. Thank
President
you.
Hill, if we could break for a minute so she could download her, take her equipment away, then she can go home.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take 10 minutes then. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll reconvene. And we are approximately, if I'm correct, on item 9, which 9A is adoption of our annual budget for the fiscal year 2007-2008.
Yes, Chairman Hill and members of the board, we have had so much fun wrestling with this budget, putting it in various iterations and back in place. Good news and bad news. The bad news is that you guys had eagle eyes and caught the one serious mistake we made in putting the budget together in terms of that state water project fund account. The good news, it was simply a typo. That number should have been $500,000+, not $400,000. And when we went back and looked at it, it was real obvious that it was just a typo when we typed up the numbers in the process. So the numbers are there and equalized, and everybody was happy and able to sleep better after we found out what it was. And, especially Gina.
That's excellent, very good news.
So what we have done is we have basically put the budget back into place in a balanced situation with everything allocated and accounted for, with the approximately $99,000 and change allocated into the fire department budget to be held there and not to be utilized for anything else. The budget can be either considered for adoption with going back and revising the fire department once the chief gets together, which is what I would recommend, because I like to walk out of here in a week or so knowing that that's behind us. Or you can hold the whole budget until the chief gets his work done on that, which he anticipates will take 2 or 3 weeks, and then adopt the whole budget at one time. Neither one of those is illegal. Neither one of those is bad. You can just do it how you choose to do it.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board? I have one. I guess this is due to the presentation we just heard, if we considered that for the budget.
That is not in the current budget at all, because that's still going to take some talking before we get to the point where we know what the real dollars are. Right. Our portion is not going to be, if her estimate, which I think is probably on the high side, comes to fruition, then our cost is not going to be a significant impact and can be handled either through some modification or however you choose to do that. The other thing is that it's, you know, notwithstanding the judge going to make the decision on August 11th, you all know how long government takes to get things done. So this monitoring study is not going to be completed by June 30th. I don't care how optimistic you want to think about it. So, and the heavy end cost is at the last. If you look at that document, that flow document that you had on it, as to how it goes, the heavy end cost is at the end of the project. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing to do. Absolutely strongly support getting it done, but getting it done under our control. And I mean the agencies in northern cities, to satisfy the judge, but to make sure that we're a part of the planning of. But no, that's what I did not purposely did not put in. The desal money is in there because we are moving forward on that.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we want to steer that information to be as useful to us for whatever other purposes may arise as well.
No pun intended, they will flow together.
Right.
And our litigation costs for the rest of the litigation is in there. Mm-hmm. What we think would cover it.
Yeah, that should...
It should end.
there's work to that end. Mm-hmm.
That money should stop flowing, hopefully.
We're putting a stopper in.
Right.
The plug.
Don't say plug.
I guess I'd like to... I support your thought of approving the budget, setting aside the money for the fire department as discussed at this time, if that meets with the approval of the rest of the board. It sounds like a good way to proceed.
It's up to you folks.
And I kind of already said that. I think we'll just have a one amount, and that can be.
It would be nice if your new person
later.
Didn't have to think about it.
Yeah. And give you some time to look at things. You haven't had a whole lot of time to look at things so far. Let's jump in and swim as fast as you can.
Well, fortunately, he's a surfer, so that helps.
Do you need a motion? So no.
Okay. To adopt the budget.
The budget.
As presented. With the $99,000 being reserved exclusively to the fire department.
That's exactly what I said.
Yes.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none.
Additional board comment?
Additional board comment, Vern?
Yeah, I just like the public to know that what is happening with this budget at this point is that we are, things that have changed. Is one, we are going to be adding, we have an amount in there to add another staff person in the front office, and we have no money going into reserves for additional replacement of items in the future. We are spending about a little over $300,000 out of reserves in this budget for capital improvements that need to be done. And what has happened is we now have grown our front office from, in the last 2.5 years, from a 3.5-person front office to a 5-person front office, which there's a number of people that have been overworked in that front office and is needed. That's basically what I want to make sure that everybody understands with this. Thank you.
And of course, the spending of money that had been previously put into reserves for purposes such as spending on capital improvements, it's like the time has come to do that, so.
Correct, correct. Yeah, these are coming out of reserves, so they're not coming from monies being being raised this year via service fees. But we also have no new monies going into reserves for future stuff.
Any other comment? Okay. May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Brookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, at this point, we have the executive session scheduled?
Yes.
Resolutions.
Yeah, we need to you need to adopt the resolution by title.
The resolution of
that's what staff limitation. Is stumbling around trying to help you with.
That's right. We have two resolutions. The first is the adoption of the fiscal year budget, and then second is the determination of the appropriation limitation
yes.
for the 2007-08 fiscal year.
You should do the appropriation limitation first, and then that sets the stage for the budget.
Okay.
Should those be renumbered then?
The number is not critical, it's the timing. So you're setting the limit, and upon that limit is what you're basing the budget. So I okay,
the,
would recommend
the appropriation
that you
limitation then
introduce
is
the appropriation limitation resolution and adopt it.
20713.
The appropriation limit then for OCSD is $6,556,840.26. Appropriations subject to the limitation are $782,579. Therefore,
and population as factored with the percentage of inflation increase. And you multiply those together in a formula. And there is, we could spend literally millions more and never even get close to this limit. But it's in the Constitution, so we have to do it every year.
Right.
Need a second on that?
I think we need
you need
a motion first of
and
all.
A second. You have a motion to introduce it by title only and then adopt.
I move that we adopt OCSD Resolution 2007-13, the determination of appropriation limitation for the 2007-2008 fiscal year.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Any public comment on this item? May I have a roll call, please, Gina?
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Brookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes.
The next action would be to adopt the other resolution.
2007-12.
Right.
I move that we adopt OCSD Resolution 2007-12, a resolution adopting the 2007-2008 fiscal year budget.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adopt the resolution 2007-12. Board member comment? Any public comment on this item? Hearing none. Roll call, please, Gina.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Brookout?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Okay, since we've taken many things on the agenda out of order, I think we are...
that's all of the agenda.
I think we've got through
except
it all.
Except the closed session.
Except for the closed session item. So at this point, we can. Alex, do you want to make a comment on the closed session?
Only to make the formally required announcement that this is a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to consider the appointment or employment of a public employee, specifically to discuss candidates for the position of general manager.
Okay. And we will then report the closed session result.
Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, I'm pleased to announce that with regard to item 15, a closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to consider the appointment or employment of a public employee, specifically to discuss candidates for the position of general manager, the board took action on a unanimous 5-0 vote to appoint Patrick J. O'Reilly as the general manager for the Oceano Community Services District, subject only to satisfactory report on a physical examination and execution of the district's form contract.
Great. Thank you very much. That's a big achievement by the district. Represents a lot of work by our staff. And the board also, I think, would like to thank Norm Getty, who participated early on and helped us a long way in this process, and Antonio Maldonado and other citizens from the community who participated in the project early on, but particularly for Norm's valuable input in the selection process. And we very much want to thank Norm and the citizens that participated. So we'll look forward to Mr. O'Reilly starting on Monday, and welcome him to the district.
Got a seat ready for him.
Got a seat ready for him. Right. Gina's applauding, but it's the staff that needs to be applauded, because you've done a tremendous amount of work on that, and we very much appreciate it. All of the good work to bring that to completion. Okay, do we have any written communications, anything?
Nothing.
Okay, in that case, we're adjourned.
Great.